Blog Talk Radio.
Artist, pianist, composer Bob Baldwin. Have you heard about Coffee Talk Jazz Radio? Well, join the Coffee Talk party with veteran broadcaster and host, Miss Bridget Lewis. She brings listeners the best there is in diversity and talent, and you'll get a chance to peek behind the curtain and get up close and personal with your favorite artist. You'll experience world-class contemporary Latin, gospel straight ahead, and smooth jazz greats all right here at Coffee Talk Jazz Radio. Our show's call-in number is 1-347-934-0108. That's 347-934-0108. And our show link is www.blogtalkradio.com/Miss Bridget Lewis. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/CoffeeTalkJazz. And check out our official website at www.CoffeeTalkJazzRadio.com. This is Bob Baldwin, and we'll see you real soon, okay? Ciao.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Thankful Thursday, and this is another edition of Coffee Talk Jazz Radio. And I am beyond excited. I am your award-winning host, Miss Bridget Lewis. We have a very special guest in the building, and I see that folks are already logging in from all across the globe. So let's just get right to it. I am so excited to introduce the legendary saxophonist, Warren Hill. And let me just tell you about his impressive background. Oh, my goodness. He has been an award-winning saxophonist for many years. He's an accomplished saxophonist, renowned for his unique sound and genre-defying style. As a recording musician, he has been creating hits for decades, and now we have the pleasure of debuting his new single, Simple, featuring his beautiful daughter, Olivia. Welcome to the Coffee Talk Party, Warren. Hey, hey now.
Hi, Bridget. Can you hear me all right?
I can. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
All right. Awesome. I am so, so excited to have you as my very special guest. And I told your publicist, I said, I've interviewed so many incredible artists, I'm not certain how we missed each other at the festival, but I sure am glad that we have you on live for at least 45 minutes to 60 minutes. And so I just want to get right into the genesis of your story. And the first question I have is, when did you fall in love with music?
Oh, wow. When I was a kid, like six years old. I think I originally, my parents wanted me to do something with music. And so they got me drum lessons, and that didn't work out. I actually went to one drum lesson. And then the next time I had to go, I was a no-show. And back then, you know, we weren't like helicopter kids or anything. You know, I had to walk back at 6 years old through the neighborhood, across the busy street, you know, to get to my drum lesson. I decided not to go, and I went and hung out in the park instead. Came home, and my mom was freaking out. Like, where were you? You didn't show up. I said, Mom, I just went to the park. But anyway, you know, it's all about your teacher, right? I think the drum teacher was probably some 16 or 17 year old guy who just wanted to show him, didn't know how to teach. So then I tried guitar lessons, and it was this woman in our neighborhood who just taught on Saturdays in her basement. And I went to my first lesson, and she said, what do you want to learn? And I just said, she says, name a song that you like. And I can't remember what the song was, but I named the song. She goes, I will teach you how to play that song. It was nothing like player scales or, you know, all the stuff that really isn't that fun, all the technical stuff. It was more about, let's just play music that you love. And she taught me how to play it, and that was the first of, next thing I know, I had a book of like 150 songs, and I would just sit at home in front of everybody and just play a guitar and sing these songs. And, you know, that was it. It was right from the beginning. I was just doing what I loved because I felt the music. I loved the music. And it was all about that first teacher, you know, connecting with me.
Well, and as soon as you said that, you're really taking me back. And I'm not going to tell my age, but by the time I'm done talking, I'm certain that the listeners will say, okay, she didn't just get here. She's been around for a while. So it's actually wisdom talking. So I come from a family of educators, and my late father, Arthur, also played saxophones, a voracious appetite for music, warm, kind-hearted, and I think that's really where I developed, you know, my love, you know, for music. But I want to tell you really quickly before I finish what I'm going to say, so many people are logged on. You guys, we have some gift giveaways, so let me just welcome the folks to the Coffee Talk Jazz Thursday party. San Antonio, California, we see you in the house. 113 people are in the building. Austin, Texas, 987. What in the world is going on in Austin? We love you. Thank you for coming. Jacksonville, Florida, we see you. Columbus, Ohio, in the building. San Francisco, Seattle, Washington, Nashville, Tennessee, what's happening? El Paso, Texas, a lot of Texans. Nevada, the West. Wow, Detroit, Michigan, we see you. Tucson, Arizona. Mesa, Arizona. Raleigh, North Carolina, we absolutely love it. Wow. So right now, oh, my goodness, right now we have about 3,200 folks. We did add. So mind you guys, I will go and open up the boards about 15 minutes after the hour, and you can ask Warren any question that is relevant to his musical career, and we're going to be celebrating this day in jazz, birthdays, and a few gift giveaways, but you can't win if you don't call in, right? So I want to get back to guitar. When you talked about that, you took me back to a seminal moment in my life where music really kept me grounded, and this happened about 16 years ago, and I got a call from my sister, and her voice was almost inaudible, Warren, and I talked with my mother the night before, and my mother had never been sick, and my sister's trying to tell me kind of like what's happening with my mom, and it didn't make sense, and she said, you got to get to the hospital, and I was an hour away in another city, and I figured out which hospital my mom was, and I get in there, and I'm looking at my mom, Warren, and my mother is unconscious and pale, and she's hooked up to all these different machines, and I'm like, my mind can't even process what I'm looking at. So her doctor comes over, Dr. Yadiger, I'll never forget it, and he says, we don't quite know what's going on with your mom, but we're going to do an MRI, right? And they'll give us a better chance. They'll give us a better idea of what's happening. And so he comes back, and he holds up the x-ray, and he says, your mom had a blood clot that burst in her brainstem. And my world completely changed, Warren. It completely changed. And he says, well, we don't really know what the outcome will be, but we're going to try and get her into surgery to see if we can save a life. And I said, okay. And as we move forward on 22 hours of surgery, we're on the other side of that. And I got to tell you, it was the music that kept me grounded. And one of my favorite songs, and I'm certain that you've done some work with Peter White, there was a song by Peter White called Perfect Moment. And I wanted to go back to that perfect moment before my mother became ill. And that's really the power of music. And I got to tell you, every single day, I would listen to that song for, it was about 4 or 5 months. My mother was in a coma. And I said there was something about the chord progressions, the melodies, and it was something about the way that that song just hit my soul. I didn't know Peter White. Peter didn't know me. I didn't have a Rolodex. I was an admissions advisor at USC. I had no idea. And I'm like, I'm going to email Peter because I got to know what was happening in his life. So guess what? I email Peter Warren. He responds back, and I said, I really would like to talk with you, and I want to interview you. And literally that was how Coffee Talk Jazz Radio was born in 2006. And he shared with me, he said, hearing your story of how my music helped to get you through a very difficult time, this is why I travel 300 times out of the year and why I'm one of the whitest musicians on the planet. I'm like, Peter, please stop, because he goes from the venue to the airport and then back to the venue. And so when I listen to your music, even though this is my first time interviewing you, your music has had a profound effect on me. And I was sharing this information, you know, with your publicist. And to me, that's the art of great music, where I've listened to your songs back from 1999 and they're still relevant today. Have you ever heard anyone else share that with you? I'm sure you have, but I just wanted you to know how I really feel about your playing.
Well, thank you for that. And I'm, what you went through with your mom is resonates, because I've experienced so many stories like that from my fans as well. And people would write me, you know, back in the day, you'd actually get physical mail. Because I'm going to give my age away. You know, my first record came out in 1991. I was 5 years old. No, I'm just kidding. came out in 91, and I think I was 21 or something. Well, somewhere around there, and 24. You know, we started getting fan mail. And people would say, I think that's the interesting thing about instrumental music, right? Because it just evokes a feeling, and there are no words. So the words usually tell you how you're supposed to feel. But in instrumental music, why it's so universal worldwide, such this appeal, is that everyone interprets the music in their own way. So it resonates with whatever they're going through in their lives. And, you know, people have, hey, your music got me through cancer. Your music possibly helped us conceive our child. I mean, it can go any way, right? And when you hear from someone that would say, let's say, you know, it got me through cancer, I mean, it's literally what Peter said. It is the motivating force why you continue to do it, because, you know, this is jazz music. Obviously, we're not rock stars or anything. We do it because we love it. And this is where our passion is in this music. And when you, even if it's just one person writing you and telling you that, that will carry you through for the entire year. I swear to God, it's really special, especially when people do communicate that with us. A lot of people feel like, oh, you know, I shouldn't bother them. I shouldn't tell them. No, those are the things that motivate us, you know, for sure. And Peter's a great guy. And yes, I've known him for many, many years. I think we started our careers in the same year, basically, and toured so many times together. Yes, he's a great bloke, as we would say. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. And to be honest with you, I think I forgot your original question.
I think you said, have you
heard those things? Yeah.
Yeah, and I was saying, have you had fans share with you how your music has helped them through a very difficult or challenging time, and not necessarily challenging, but you said, you know, maybe, you know, someone could conceive listening to your music or a wedding or just something just beautiful. But that really is what I absolutely just love, you know, just about music. And when I think about music, I think that everyone was probably listening to music, you know, during the pandemic. But I want to transition, and I want to ask you a couple other questions, and then we're going to get into some of your delicious music because I have three beautiful tracks that we're going to play. And so because you have so many different genres, and I know that you attended Berklee College of Music, we're going to jump into that in just a few moments. Is there a period of music history that speaks to you, like the 30s, the 40s, or the 50s, or none of the above?
Honestly, I wouldn't go back. I kind of jump like a couple of centuries. So I kind of skip, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s probably. 50s is when, you know, when jazz was really born, and in the 60s, of course. But prior to that, you know, I go all the way back to classical. You know, Beethoven's probably one of my favorites from classical music, just because I feel like just the passion that he put into his music was incredible. But then you just fast forward, and it starts to become, you know, late 50s, and bebop was born with Charlie Parker, and then Miles Davis, and John Coltrane, and all
God.
The early,
yeah.
You know,
all the great.
The early jazz pioneers just kind of knocked my socks off. But again, remember I said I was playing guitar first, so I was
right.
Just living in Toronto, growing up in Toronto, I wasn't exposed to jazz at all, and I had to find jazz, and when I did, it was just sort of this. I was just blown away with it all, so it all came to me at once. I loved the 70s, 80s. I loved fusion, Weather Report, Grover Washington, everything was happening then. The early Sanborn, you know, the Brecker Brothers, just that whole Jaco Pastorius, that whole scene, and Pat Metheny. That was just my jam right there. I just started, you know, expanding my horizons as I think when I went to music school, before I went to Berklee, I went to Eastman in Rochester
for a
high school session. And it was just a 6-week thing. Like I was 17 or something. That's where I got, I just started to listen to what everyone else is listening to. Prince, Stevie Wonder, here's Jeff Beck. And, you know, just, that's the thing about music. When you keep discovering new things, it always feels new, even if it's something that was recorded that you're hearing it for the first time, but maybe it was recorded 10, 20 years ago. A lot of the jazz that I was experiencing at the time, you know, that's just so exciting and fresh. Now people just take it for granted, and they put it on their phone and listen for 15 seconds and skip to the next song. We immersed, you know, when we found something we love, we immersed in it heavily.
I still have, you're probably going to laugh, I still have my late mother's 2001 Toyota Avalon. Let me tell you why I have it, and then we're going to jump into a song, because it has a 6-digital CD player in it, and I still have 8-track tapes. The 8 tracks I can't play in the car, but I can play the cassette. So I still have cassettes, because some of that music you can't get anymore. And I remember back in the day, you know, when you would be able to go to Licorice Pizza, I can't remember some of the names of some of the old record stores that used to be out, and I would run and couldn't wait, you know, to get there, and you go to the end of the aisle, and I'm like trying to hum the melody and sing the song, and the cashier would say, no, I don't really think that we have that selection. Can you tell me the name of the artist? I'm like, I don't really know the name of the artist, but let me see if I can try and sing it, right? So he really took me back to that moment when you begin to talk about just, you know, just the different periods and stuff like that of music. But I want to ask you this question. I want to jump into a couple of your tracks. Your sound is so distinct, and I think about some of our friends in the industry, from Candy Dulfer to Boney James, Kirk Whalum, Josh Redman. I mean, I could go all the way down the line, and I can listen to a song with my eyes closed, and I can tell which saxophonist is playing, which artist is playing. So the question is, How did you find your sax voice? Because yours is so different than Everett Hart. No comparison. Yours is so different than Tom Braxton. So that's the question I want you to ponder on while I get into your brand new track. We're debuting it for the first time on Coffee Talk Jazz Radio. It's entitled Simple. If you can set that up for us, we'll play it for the fans. We'll come back and give something away, and we'll give you a chance to think about how you found your sax sound.
Cool. Okay. Thank you.
this is Marjane, contemporary gospel recording artist. Do you love good coffee and a great chat? Well, today is your chance to peek behind the curtain with your favorite artist. Are you celebrating a birthday? If so, join us with the Coffee Talk Jazz Radio Birthday Club. Send us a text at 562-355-0311 or email us at coffeetalkjazzradio@msn.com. We'll also give you a live shout-out and plenty of Twitter love. You never know what you might win. Call us today if it's your birthday at 347-934-0108. Be sure to follow our tweets and also follow us on Facebook. So happy birthday from Miss Bridget and the Coffee Talk Jazz crew.
Hi, this is Nicoleon. Let's keep the Coffee Talk party brewing each Sunday, 5 to 8 p.m., Tuesdays, 3 to 6 p.m., and Fridays, 1 to 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You'll hear jazz greats, R&B, soul, and funk influences. Stay tuned and you'll hear jazz past and jazz still to come. Be sure to tune in and listen in with your host, Miss Bridget.
And we're back and we're broadcasting live. You're listening to the very best in Blog Talk Radio here at Coffee Talk Jazz with your host, Miss Bridget Lewis, and legendary saxophonist and entrepreneur. Warren Hill is in the building. You guys, don't make me put everything back in my boxes. I've got gift giveaways today. Visa cards, and Coffee Talk Jazz t-shirts. I see the Western and Eastern Caribbean in the building. St. Thomas, St. Croix, hello, hello. Welcome to the party. Go ahead and press the one on your phone. I'm going to open up the board, and you can ask Warren any question that is relevant to music. Now, Warren, I have to give your publicist a shout-out. So, Tamara, if you are in the building, hello, hello, and thank you so much for coordinating this effort. And if your beautiful daughter is listening, hello, and shout-out. Am I pronouncing her name correctly? Is it Olivia?
That's correct.
Beautiful. Now, was she accompanying you on this particular track?
Yes, she was. You could hear her riffing away.
My God. I listened to it. I mean, her voice is just, her pitch is amazing.
Yes, and I'll even one up that. She actually wrote the song.
Really? Wow.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's get into that. How long did it take Olivia to write on, and when did you know that she had a gift of music, because you all have a powerful family dynamic with your wife, yourself, and your daughter. So when did you see that gift in your daughter?
Oh, gosh, like age two. I mean, she... She grew up on the road, you know, with Tamara and I. We always traveled together. When she was 6 months old, when started having her come on the road, with us, and you know, we had the baby Bjorn and all the accoutrements, the cribs and everything,
right,
backstage.
Right, of course.
it was that, or you know, I'm touring 6 months out of the year, so that, or I just missed her whole childhood. So it was like, let's just go together. So she basically grew up backstage around musicians, you know, and everybody warming up and riffing and playing and sound checks, and then she'd come on stage and she would join me on a song. You know, I think by the time she was, I think we got her first passport maybe when she was 5, and by the time she was 10, she needed another one because she already filled up all the pages with stamps. You know, she'd been all over the world, so many countries, and it was just right away. I think her piano teacher told us one day, you know, your daughter has perfect relative pitch. There's a difference between perfect pitch and perfect relative pitch, she has a perfect relative pitch, and she just had this knack of, you know, hearing something and being able to get on the piano and figure out what it was and replay it for you. You know, she could hear a song now but she hears it all. She hears the lyrics, she hears the whole thing, and she can just play it back to you like almost immediately. You know, she knows in her head like what it is. She's just this song. She usually writes her songs like very quickly. You know, she'll sit down very intensely, blocks everything out, turns everything off, and when she has an idea, and she will not get up from the piano or the guitar until the song is done, music, lyrics, the entire thing. So this is actually a song that has lyrics, and it was on recorded for her record. And everyone in the studio was all live musicians. You know, yes, we still I still record with live musicians. Nobody does that anymore, but an incredible band. And anyway, but they all know my playing and whatnot, and my horn happens to be sitting there in the studio, and everyone's like, hey, you should try this in saxophone. And I think Tamara was spearheading it. She was producing, and I was like, you know, I don't know. And they're like, come on. So we made everybody leave, and I pulled out the horn, and I just did one take of it, and it just, like, as I was playing, and I got chills, you know, because not only was I sitting there, I knew the song, so I was able to just play it instantly in one take, but just the way that it, like, what you heard was pretty much how it went down, how I played it in the studio that day. We just refined it a little bit after the fact because, you know, I wasn't really warmed up or anything when I did it originally. Yeah, that's the way that came about. And it just, I felt when I was playing it, I got chills because I felt like this is a song that I would write for myself, but my daughter wrote it. This is crazy. And I just, it was quite a moment. And then hearing it, you know, I know you told me to think about my answer to your last question, but I, when I hear, you know, when I actually, one of the few songs that I've recorded where every time I listen to it, I relive that moment and I just think about my daughter.
Yeah.
So I end up listening to this. I don't listen to myself very often, you know, so it's one of a few times that I actually do listen to myself. So anyway,
I think it is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And thank you for sharing, you know, that emotional moment. And when you talked about, you know, passport, you guys have traveled the world. Do you have a favorite Ports of Call? Because you guys have been everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I have to say Europe, like Italy, France, you know, Spain, and London. We just love it over there. Love all the different cultures of every country, and they're all so close together. And you know the languages.
Oh yeah.
And then actually, over the past, I would say 10 years or something or more, I started going to, well, I went to Asia, Southeast Asia, for the first time in 1995.
Okay.
And I was over there for a month. We did Singapore, Philippines, Manila, like Indonesia, Malaysia, every television show, radio show. It was just like a blitz, PR blitz, and just playing every day. And I was actually spent a lot of time there with Air Supply was also on the same tour with me. It's kind of a wild thing. But I just kind of fell in love with the Southeast Asian people, you know, especially when you're there doing music and you're just meeting people that love music. And it was when I talked about how it's kind of this international language, even though we don't speak the same languages, we connect because the music is instrumental. And then I kind of rekindled that about 10, 12 years ago, and I started touring a lot in South Korea, and then I expanded to China. Like pre-COVID, I think I went to China 4 times that year in 2019.
My goodness. Wow.
You know?
Wow.
And everyone has their political things, but that's the thing about being a musician is that we all kind of, you know, vibe the same. We're all you know, we feel things the same way, and we interpret the world
sure.
the same way, I think. So you can really connect with people. I don't know. It seems like everywhere I go, if I'm going there for music, I'm with mm-hmm. my mm-hmm. tribe. I'm with the right people, and we always have such a great experience, you know.
Wow. When you said that, it reminded me. Paul Jackson Jr. is a very good friend of mine. I've known Paul probably 30 or 40 years, and he is one of the most humble musicians and one of the greats, you know, and I know you know Paul. I'm certain that you've probably
oh, yeah.
played with him, and I remember when Paul appeared on the first cover of our 2013 Coffee Talk Jazz magazine, and I had to do the interviews, right, and so I call this Mama Blanche. And so Mama always gives up the goods. And then I talk with his sister Karen. And then I remember him telling me the story of Patrice Rushen and how she took him around. Like, he knew as a kid at 13 years old, when everyone else was outside playing, like, he and his dad, Paul Senior, like, they were in the garage, and, you know, he was getting it done. And years later, after having a conversation with Patrice, one of the things she said to me just totally makes me laugh. Patrice is maybe 5 or 6 years older than Paul, and they used to live up the street from one another. And she would go to his house, and she would grab his hand, and she would walk him to elementary school, and she would talk to him about music. And then later on, she took him around, and that's what he ended up playing the session, you know, becoming one of the top, you know, first call session musicians. But one of the things I remember asking him when we were live, and I said, what makes a great musician? I'm going to pose the same question to you. And he said, a musician that is humble. And he said, and when you go in, he said, just play the music. For example, I'll use a song, Save the Best for Last, with Vanessa Williams. And he was coming in to sub for somebody. I guess somebody had gotten sick on the road or whatever it was. And so this person was just enamored with Vanessa Williams, and he could play, but he tried to come in and play the song. It was already a hit. And I remember Paul told me, he says, just come in, read the charts, play the music. Don't try and do anything fancy. Don't act like you're a know-it-all, and just be humble. So my question to you is, what makes a great musician in your book? Because you're so successful, and you all have done the work, you and Tamara and your daughter. What makes a successful musician?
Well, it's funny because you mentioned probably one of the most preeminent, like, one, in my opinion, because I've worked with Paul, not only live on stage, but in the studio, and he played on my, I met him on my second record in 92 when I was recording Devotion.
Yeah.
I played a bunch of songs there. and of course, you know, I knew who he was. I'm like, this is the guy on Michael Jackson's Thriller. I mean, he's the man.
Exactly.
And, he was that. He's just very, his game, he's got his game face on when he shows up, and he can read.
Oh my God.
For guitar players, it's really hard to read music. He could sight read music, and he plays, and you better have the record button on red when he starts, because he's going to play it perfectly down the first time, you know.
Right.
And
okay.
But he is just a very serious musician. Now, here's the thing. There's really a couple different types of musicians. So in the studio, you want someone who is humble. You want someone who, unless it's their record, you know, they're there to support the lead artist, whether it's a singer, you know, Vanessa Williams, whoever, or it's saxophonist, or that's your job. You're not there to, like, showboat. Now, here's all my greatest licks, you know, on one 30 seconds. He is just the master of supporting the lead, supporting the melody, and finding the right parts. You know, he's just incredible at that. But then the other thing about Paul is he's also a great live musician, because when you are playing live,
oh my God,
right? Now you gotta showboat a little bit. You gotta entertain people. They're right. They don't want to see you stand there, you know, with your eyes closed. They're paying good money to see a show, and you have. But that's a lot of times studio musicians are not great live musicians, and vice versa. Paul's one of those guys who can do it all. And that's a rare thing. He's just super precise in the studio, and he's also he can put on a show. You know, you can, when you watch him live, you're entertained. So to me, yeah, that's the thing. And I used to literally have, like, recording musicians that I'd worked with recording, and then I would never bring them on the road. I'd have a whole other set of people that I'd bring on the road, because it's not as precise. You don't have to worry so much about all those intricacies. You're really there to, you know, to entertain people, put on a show. That's basically my definition of it.
Oh my God, man, you really said a mouthful on that one. Just an incredible, incredible musician. I want to jump into one of my favorite tracks. It's called "Play It Like You Mean It." If you can set this up and tell us a little bit about this track. I begged your publisher. I'm like, I've got to have that track. Please send it over. It's one of my favorites. I know it's off one of your previous CDs, but I wanted to play it for the fans. If you could set it up, I want to play it, and I really want to give something away, you guys. So set this up for me, then I'll go and I'll play it for our fans for it.
Did you want me to talk about the song before you played it?
Yeah, definitely. Just tell us a little bit about the song, and then we'll go ahead and we'll play it. Please, sir. Uh-huh.
Absolutely. All right. I need to have a little more coffee for coffee talk here, you know. You guys ever do the Linda Richmond, Mike Myers, Saturday Night Live, you know, welcome to coffee talk.
We're all from Boston.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Oh, my God.
Play Like You Mean It. Here's the interesting thing about that song. I did a tour, a couple of tours with, I'm sure you know, Marion Meadows, Paul Taylor.
Yeah.
We did this thing that Marion put together called Gentlemen of the Night. And it was a fun tour. And I was driving down to one of the shows as a West Coast, so I was driving from my house down to Newport Beach or something like that. So it was a long drive, and I always have, pre-iPhones. I probably had the iPhone then, so you could just voice record. And this melody popped into my head, and it was just the words, everything, play it like you mean it. And I don't know why I was just inspired by Marion and Paul and Chip Sharon and all the guys we had in the band. And I was actually writing the song thinking, this would be a great song to do in this tour. And by the time I got to the gig, the song was all piecemealed, you know, like I'd stop and record and of course I'm trying to drive. Back in the day, you know, you're not supposed to be holding your phone, and I'm like, but there's always traffic, so I wasn't going anywhere. And I actually had the song written.
I love it.
The song was written by the time I showed up and got on stage for soundcheck. That's where I wrote it, in the car, driving to a gig.
Oh, my God. You're a genius. I love it, you guys. I'm the legendary saxophonist, Warren Hill. We're going to play a track called Play It Like You Mean It. Let's take a listen.
Play it like you mean it.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
Baby,
Hi, this is Marco.
And this is Stan.
And we are the Smooth Jazz Alley. We'd like to thank Coffee Talk Jazz Radio for our live interview with Ms. Bridget Lewis.
And also for our successful 4-week radio campaign that has made us a top seller in jazz on CDBaby.com.
We are back and broadcasting live on this beautiful Thursday. Our guests are extraordinarily talented, and Warren is bringing us a style of music that is sublimely beautiful and often innovative, and we're so happy to have him as our very special guest. I'm tweeting live on Twitter. I'm going to go ahead and pop up the link so you guys can go ahead and purchase his music. I am absolutely just loving all of your music because you're still taking me back to that moment in time 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and your music is still relevant. And I just love music.
I think I lost you there for a second. Hello, hello.
I think that we lost audio for just a few moments. We are back, and that is the power of technology. I'm just saying it's hot right now, so who knows what just happened, but I know how to recover very quickly, and I'm just saying. So speaking of
hey,
recover,
it's live.
So now I was getting ready to say, now let's just transition. Okay, have you ever had an oops moment on stage, with Warren, where you played everything perfectly in rehearsal, the back line is set up, sound check, everything, and then the lights go out, or somebody trips getting onto the stage? Have you ever had an oops moment on stage? How did you recover?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, 30 years I've been doing this, 25 countries, I don't know, thousands of shows. It's definitely happened.
God.
The cool thing about being a jazz musician, though, is like you can always say, yeah, I meant to do that. You know, right? Like you play the wrong note. It's like whatever. People
right,
get really...
Right.
When I first started out, in my very first tour, if you can imagine, as a solo artist, I was opening for Natalie Cole, the Unforgettable Tour, for 40 cities.
Oh, my God.
You know, I think we were playing Radio City Music Hall and the Paramounts and the all the famous Chicago Theater, just incredible landmark places. This is my first tour, you know, so I had to do a 40-minute set opening up for her. And I was so nervous back then because I just was afraid of making mistakes or saying the wrong thing or whatever. I was, you know, whatever, young in my early 20s. I'm not saying, like, I don't care, but of course you care. But you,
of course, yeah.
The longer you've done it, you know, you're just really good at getting back on your feet again when something happens. You know, the power goes out or if the keyboard fries because you're outdoors in a festival and the sun's been shining on it and the whole circuit board, you know, goes up in smoke or something. Okay, fine. Guitar player, you take a solo, or I'll take a longer solo on my saxophone and we'll kill time. You got to know how to do it and also know that,
exactly.
You know, we're human. Right, we're human and things
exactly.
happen and you just bounce
exactly.
and it always works.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. I want to talk about the Cancun Jazz Festival that you put together many years ago. I need to go to Cancun. Like, I've got my passport. Like, I'm ready to go. I need a vacation. I work all the time. But this is what we do in this industry. And people say, oh, my God, I'd love to do what you do. I'm going to go, are you sure about that? Because I'm on musician time. Like, I work with artists all over the country and around the world, and I'm on different time zones. So, like, I'm up at 3:45, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, but I absolutely love what I do. But I want to talk about Cancun. Tell us when you started, when did you make the decision to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to do something different, even though you've been invited in to other events and stuff like that. What made you start to say, hey, I want to put on my own darn festival, and how did you pick Cancun?
Well, to be honest, I started this kind of concept of a of the, you know, a vacation festival. I did the first jazz cruise, and put the idea together in 2002, and then we did our first sailing in 2004, Warren Hill Smooth Jazz Cruise, and I had that. I owned and ran that with for about 4 years, and then I sold it. And I just said to myself, you know, I would like to do this similar. I mean, we killed it. The cruise that I started is still sailing today. I think now they do two a year, and it's spawned all the other ones that are out there. Capital Jazz, Dave Codd, everybody. They're all. The things I originally put together. It's the idea of bringing fans and artists, musicians, and everybody into the same place for extended length of time, where you just all these. You're just creating this template. And the magic just happens, right? Especially in jazz music, because we all want to jam and come up with stuff on the spot. And we love our band. We love, you know, we don't try to, unlike other genres of music, you know, where the artists try to avoid their fans at any cost. We actually like our fans, like hanging out with them. You know, I did my the next one. I said I want to try this in a hotel, and we did one in Jamaica. I think in 2009, and which was great, but it was a one-time event. And I said, okay, I'm gonna look for the right opportunity to do this again, do it right. And the Cancun Jazz Festival, I actually purchased it in 2016, and there was only like a couple hundred customers at the time, and I said, okay, I'm gonna do my thing to this. I'm gonna make this huge. And within the second year or whatever, we were selling out. And it's still going today, and it's a great experience. We just had our last one last November. Earth, Wind, and Fire was one of our headliners, and one coming up in November. November we have Jill Scott, and we've got Boney James, and we've got Pieces of a Dream, Najee. We've got Damien Escobar. I mean, incredible lineup. And, you know, we just take over the hotel, and the magic just happens. You know, it's music and music lovers together in one place. All-inclusive food, and what could be better?
Oh, my goodness. Wow. So I only have one last question for you, and you've been so gracious with your time. You have been in this business for a very, very long time. What would you say to a novice that's just listening in, kind of give them like maybe like a 1, 2, 3 steps and say, hey, you know, I've gone to school. You know, I've gone to school. This message actually came through the chat. I've gone to school. I feel that I'm ready, and I'm kind of really just ready to jump in, kind of like with both feet. I don't know so much about the business side of music, and I think that's where people kind of really lose it. Music is, in fact, a business. The playing card is great, but this is a business. You know, you're in business to make money. So can you really speak to that? Because you and your wife, you guys are seasoned. You know the ins, the outs, ups, and the downs.
Yes. Well, you know, I went to Berklee College of Music, and
of course,
and my one complaint, I don't know if it's changed. I mean, it's been a long time since I was there, but my one complaint there was like, yes, they teach you how to play music, but the hardest part is how do you make a living playing music? And because a lot of people can play, a lot of people can, you know, sing in the shower, but how do you? You know, and then when I started out, you know, we didn't have social media. We didn't have any of these outlets where you could be your own promoter, publicist, whatever. You know, record companies had to do that for you. But now everybody's kind of their own, can do it on their own independently. But there's so many. There's thousands of songs get released every day, you know. Mm-hmm. And how do you compete? I would say that every break I ever had was because of someone that I was a friend, someone that I knew, a connection that I made and nurtured. Because you never know when that connection is going to, you know, something just might come up. I would say, like, most of the opportunities, you have to be ready to go, you know, when they call.
Absolutely.
When they're ready to turn on the recording light, you know, you got to always be practicing. So always be at your best. You never know when the call is going to come. I remember when I got called to do Arsenio Hall. Remember Arsenio? And
oh my God, you know, beautiful! You really take me down memory lane right now.
Right,
the dog pound.
It was
yes.
It was a friend of mine. I don't know. Some music guest dropped out and last minute, and it was like 11 o'clock in the morning. And a friend who knew someone, like get Warren Hill. And I got the call, and I was down at the studio rehearsing with Star and his name, Michael, the keyboard player, and all the guys, and learning all the music. And in about, and I was there in like 2 hours later, and next thing you know, by 4 p.m., we were taping the show. But I was ready. I practiced every day. I was like always ready to go. And I think the other thing is musicians that are in a certain, sometimes they're coming from maybe a smaller town. They're like, yeah, I'm playing all the time. I've got every gig. I'm doing this. And I ask them, but are you playing with the same people all the time? And they're like,
wow.
Yeah. That's the big mistake right there, right?
Yeah.
Because if you've got to, it's all about, if you're with the same people, you're going to stay with the same people all the time. And you need to expand. Try something. When
right.
I was growing up
Absolutely.
In Toronto, I played with, when Carabana came in from in the summer, you know, I played with the Arrow and I played with the Baron and, you know, Soca music. And then when that was done, I'm playing reggae bands, and then I'm playing with a funk band, you know, doing Prince. And then I play with a straight ahead jazz thing. Always try something new, try something that's going to challenge you. Right. Because, and then that's where you're going to meet the people and connect with different
mm-hmm.
people. And then those tentacles just spread out all over the place. And you know, and then you do have to, you gotta self-promote, you know, because nobody's going to hear about you.
Oh, my God.
No one's talking about
right.
you.
Right. If you're sitting in the garage. And so it's funny when you said that. I think it was probably 2014 or 2015. So we were set to go and do the Grammys. We were doing, like, all the pre-Grammy parties. But what a lot of people didn't know is, like, you know, after losing my job, you know, working in admissions advisor at USC, I was at home taking care of my mom. And I'm like, okay, I have all these wonderful gifts of marketing and promotions and writing and da-da-da. And I said, I'm going to do something with it. And by then, you know, Coffee Talk Jazz had already started. But I was really excellent at building out relationships and connecting and really connecting with people on a very deep emotional level. And so with that said, had gone to, I think the first event, I think we were probably at the Whiskey A Go-Go. That was like our first stop. And so that was back in the days. This is really going to make you laugh. That was back in the days when we were passing out business cards. Remember those, right? So we're passing out business cards back in the day. You never know who was in the room. And so had given my card to someone, didn't know who she was. And so she said she had sent me an email. And I didn't see the email because by then Coffee Talk was really in full swing and I had assistants and all that kind of stuff. And I just missed the email. So this person happened to be an executive producer for NBC Universal. I had no idea. So she called me. She said, hey, my name is Alyssa. I'm with NBC Universal. And I met you, you know, up at the Whiskey A Go at the pre-Grammy party. And she said, I decided to start following you on social media, right? She said, and then I asked about you. I asked around, asked who you were, if people knew you, is she for real, the real deal, da-da-da. People said, yeah. So she says, we have a couple of things that are coming up, and they had never had a jazz component to America's Got Talent. Now, I didn't know that she produced America's Got Talent. I had no idea. And she says, well, you know, watching you on social media, she says, you're the go-to lady for all things jazz in Los Angeles. I said, I am. And she says, yes, it seems to be looking at your, and I think this is when Instagram had been out and it was a totally different account, but nonetheless. So she says, I have a proposition for you. And I'm telling you, I'm going to try not to be emotional because it just, the amount of money that I was offered, it made me cry. And she says, well, I'd like you. She says, she said, I want to connect with you. And I want to know if you'd be interested in producing shows for television. I was, wait, like what? I had never done anything in television before. And my mom needed to have another surgery. And, you know, my family, we banded together. We spent all this money and it was so expensive and all that kind of stuff. And so I got to tell you, Warren, the amount of money that she offered was just enough to pay for the additional expenses that my mom needed. And that's really the power of connection. Me going to an event passing out cards and talking, you know what I mean? And then that opened up the door for everything else. And so when you talked about building out relationships and kind of getting, you know, kind of, you know, spreading your tentacles out, I think it's so important, because you never know who knows who, and that opened up the door to everything else that we have started doing. And so I'm telling you,
exactly.
You're taking me down a whole entire rabbit trail, but I just want to thank you so very much for your time today. You're an incredible artist. I love your music. Please thank Tamara. Please thank Olivia. I'm going to connect with you in person somewhere at some time. I promise you I'm definitely going to do that. Definitely want to get some photos. And I'll leave you with the last word, and then I'm going to go out and take us out with Simple, because I just love the track. So I'm going to leave you with the last word, and then we'll just play a track.
Well, last word is just, it was a real pleasure that you took the time with me, and I really enjoyed myself. I love that last story, and I think also someone else is looking out for you and your mom, too. There was more things at play there, obviously. Not just Office Max where you got your business cards, but someone else was looking out for you. And I really appreciate. It has been too long. I don't know why we never connected before, Bridget. But I really appreciate you having me on.
Is everything.
Yeah. Well, I hope it's the first of many. And I also just have to say, too, I was
too.
Really touched when I heard Nick Colione's voice in the little bumper there. In whatever that is.
Oh,
I just had
God.
To say something there. I just had a tear.
Yes.
He played
yes.
my Jam in Jamaica event, and he still comes to Jamaica. Jamaica, right?
Yes.
And he shows up, and he still has the suits and all the hats.
Yeah.
And he had a different one every night. I was like, where did you put all this? How did you get it all here? Love that guy. Love him and miss him.
The best
anyway,
man,
all right.
Smooth Jazz, with music in our hearts and jazz in our souls. We want to thank you, our friends, fans, and supporters, for making Coffee Talk Jazz award-winning and number one. We love you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.